Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have a very, very interesting person who is very active in the OU, thank God, I'm really happy to say. Comes in from Seattle, Washington, even to our conventions and to our meetings. Eli Genauer. Eli, how are you today?
I'm doing great, thank God.
Well, that's good to hear that. And you've written a wonderful article for the Jewish Action, which I read, When Books Can't Speak, A Glimpse into the World of Sfarim Collecting. And it's all about your collection of Sfarim and how you came about doing this. So let me just ask you this question. How did you really get into this to begin with? I mean, it sounds like something really fascinating.
Yeah, that's a good question. The way I got into it is through the Daf Yomi. What happened was I had, concluded one cycle of the Daf Yomi here in Seattle with my Rav Rabbi Moshe Klatenik, and we were going to start another one. So I thought, it'd be interesting to try and do something a little bit different. So I got this idea that what I would do is I would study each Masechta of the Gemara from a different edition. And I had one to start out with that I was given by my father-in-law, blessed memory, Dr. Eric Offenbacher, who was also very, very involved with the OU and back in the 1950s and 1960s. And he had given me as Yerusha something he had gotten from his great-grandfather, which was a Moed Cotton, Masechet Moed Cotton, that was printed in Frankfurt on Oder in 1732. And actually, when I started comparing it to the normal one, the Vilna edition, I saw there were minor differences. So that's where I got the idea that if I learned the Daf Yomi from a different edition of the Talmud, every different edition, it would just be more interesting to see the differences in the texts and things like that. So I just started buying up old Gemaras, and I found that they were actually easy to come by, not the very, very old ones, the ones from the 1500s, but starting from the 1600s and onwards, they were readily available, and I made a collection of where I had pretty much one from every different printing from 1640 to 1888. There were about 35 different editions, full editions. There were single. So, anyways, that's what I did. But of course, once you get started, it's kind of hard to stop. So,
right. But you said it was pretty easy. You said it was pretty easy to get them.
Yeah.
So where do you find them?
Well, I hate to say it, but the easiest place was on eBay. And yeah, you can find if you put in, for example, the search engine in eBay, antique Hebrew book or antique Jewish book, or if you put in antique Talmud, you'll come up with dozens of hits on it, and not all of them are in good shape, and not all of them are priced correctly, but. You can find them, and if you're looking to make a whole collection, if you spend a little bit of time, you can do that. Then there are other places. There's a website, a wonderful one that runs auctions every 3 months called virtualjudaica.com, where you can buy things. And then there's other, for the more valuable ones, then you'd go to the Jewish auction houses such as Kestenbaum in New York, Asufa, and Kedem, and Moreshet in Eretz Yisrael. And then also sometimes people will email you. Once they know you're collecting Gemara, they'll email you and tell you they have a special on something. It's not a big group of people, and everyone sort of knows who's collecting. So
how many people do you think are actually collecting, antique a Sfarim, not talk about Judaica. I mean, I know a lot of people who collect Judaica menorahs and, and Kiddush cups and things like that, but not that many Sfarim. So are there a lot?
I don't think there are a lot, but, if there's 1,000 or 2,000, it's still, there's still people who are interested in it. I assume in Eretz Yisrael there's quite a few. There are people who Just, you know, there's something about an old book. If you hold it in your hands, you look at it, and you read the Ishar, you know, you read the front page, and then you see the people who have owned it. I mean, it's something magical. And, you know, those of us who are, you know, bitten by the bug are really enamored of the whole thing. For me personally, it was an, you know, sort of a push to study. When I left the yeshiva 40 years ago, my Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Henoch Leibowitz Zatzal, I asked him what I should learn. I was in Chavetz Chaim, and he said, "You learn what you like." Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a Maimer Chazal, and that's what I've been doing. So this is something that really, you know, really gets me motivated.
No, it's beautiful. It's really, the article was really interesting. And so when you say you can go online, so I mean, just to kind of give some idea to some of the listeners, like, I mean, what you said, something has to be priced correctly. So, because I know there are people, of course, who probably find, you know, they go through someone in their family's forum, and they find a nice old Gemara or something, and they think it's worth millions of dollars. So what's the range?
So, you know, I have a pretty good feel for it over time, you know, what it is. But, you know, the ones from, I mentioned 1640, because that was the edition of Manuel Benvenisti, which I think they printed already 5,000 copies. The ones before that, first of all, they didn't print that many copies. You know, a lot of them were lost over time. But starting at that time already, they printed more copies. They were made in Amsterdam. Those ones generally cost just a few hundred dollars, some, you know, $400 or $500 if they're in really good shape. Once you get to the 1700s and 1800s, you can buy, you know, a Gemara, a beautiful Gemara printed in Lemberg in 1862 for, you know, $30 or $40.
Really?
It's not that much.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it sounds like an affordable collection.
It's not that much of a market. Some of the ones that were printed by the Hasidic printing houses, such as in Slavota and in Zhytomyr, those command a higher price because, you know, the Hasidim like them. You know, the owners were Hasidim, and they didn't print other books. They didn't print books of the Haskalah. Where someone like the Ram Press, you know, the famous, you know, right. Vilna Shah,
sure.
They printed
right.
all kinds of books. So a lot of people will like the, you know, like the Hasidic printing houses.
Hmm. Right. So I imagine you must have, I mean, in the article you mentioned several of the Sfarim that you have, but obviously you didn't mention them all. Tell me about one or two others that you have that are real specialty.
Okay. Let's see. Just because it was Pesach, just now, I have one that was printed in, it looks like about March of 1944 in Hungary, and it's called Kitzur, you know, Chukas HaPesach, and it was a book that was printed before a few times, I think starting in the late 1800s, but what happened was, in, of course, by the 1940s in Hungary, there were no books coming in from other places in Eastern Europe because of the Shoah that was going on at the time. So there were people who started printing books in Hungary, and this is well documented in the early 40s. This one was printed, has a Haskama from it that's from Parshas Beshalach in 1944, which would be around January 30th, I looked it up. So could you imagine they print a book for Pesach of 1944, and, you know, it was probably printed in February or March, and, you know, as we know, the Germans, the Nazis, took over in the middle of March. So it was a book that was printed for something that probably never even got used or, you know, was used under terrible circumstances. Another one I have, the Gemara that got me started on the thing I've really been most interested in is the missing diagrams in Rashi's commentary to Talmud Bavli. And what I mean is that in the manuscripts of Rashi, we don't have one in Rashi's handwriting himself, But there are many manuscripts from the 1300s and 1400s and 1500s, and they all have diagrams as we have today. So, for example, if Rashi is explaining something complicated in, let's say, Erevin or Sukkah, you know, he'll say the word kazeh, like this, and then there'll be a diagram. Mm-hmm. The problem was when it got transferred over to print in the late 1400s and early 1500s, the first Gemaras that were printed had the diagrams, but from the famed Bamberg Shas in 1520 to the Berman Shas in 1698, there were no diagrams, meaning that there were just blank spaces. There was the Rashi, it said the word kazeh, but there was no diagram. And until 1698, approximately, no diagrams were printed in the print, appeared in the printed Talmud. So the question is, the diagrams we have today, you know, where did they come from? I mean, there wasn't a masorah of diagrams where you could. So, you know, they come from the Marshal, they come from manuscripts, but I've kind of spent the last 5 or 6 years researching that, and the one that really got me started on it was I have an Erevin printed in 1644 in the printing shop of Ben Venisti, and if you open up to a page that in our shas has diagrams, there'll be 6 or 8 blank spaces, and it's just weird. What were people supposed to do? Draw it in themselves?
Right, interesting.
So I ended up, I wrote about this, and on the Svarim blog, that's where I write a lot. There's a blog called the Svarim blog. I recommend it. And I was contacted by a professor at Ben-Gurion University, and he wanted me to come speak at the World Congress of Jewish Studies last year, which I did, and I've had the articles translated into Hebrew, and it doesn't seem like anyone else has been working on this. So.
Really? I'm not kidding. Yeah, what about yourself?
Yeah,
wow.
And I really have to go over the, you know, the sukkahs. You know, if you're going to write something about diagrams, you have to know what it's talking about.
Wow.
So.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Very. Thank you. Now, let me ask a question, just out of curiosity. I've always thought about this. So let's say when Rashi wrote his commentary.
Yeah.
So how many editions, I mean, were there people who were sitting around him and they would then copy it, or what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened. I mean, there, Rashi had a number of editions, you know. There are bigger scholars on this than I am, for sure, but, you know, Rashi was, you know, known as Perush HaKuntres, you know, the note-taker, as it were, and there were probably different, you know, not versions, but different, you know, writings that he had that he corrected over time, and at some point in time it came to, you know, a final stage, and yeah, those were copied over by copyists.
So he had people who were there just made copies, and so as soon as he finished, he may have had a few hundred copies that were done.
No,
by
I don't
people.
Think there were a few hundred. There were maybe a few copies, and they were copied over, and unfortunately, I mean, you know, the people who do, you know, this for a living, and they go through the, you know, what's called chilufei girsaot, you know, the different, you know, you can find the one girsa that says this and one that says that, and sometimes it, most of the times, doesn't make much of a difference. You know, it's an aleph or a hey or something, but oftentimes it changes the meaning, you know, tremendously. And when the people first printed Gemaras, you know, they really had a tremendous responsibility. They couldn't just take one manuscript and start, you know, printing. What they did was they compared them, and that was the big work of the original, you know, printers. They hired people who were Talmid Chachamim, and they actually went through manuscripts and tried to come up with the proper one. As time went by, people, you know, as we know, the Hagos Habach, he had his own, you know, sort of textual emendations, and you know, we hope we what we have now is correct the girsa as we possibly could have. But even today, they find things that are a little bit different.
So there are always two things that really I think about. Also, one is, how is it possible that we're able to preserve a work like Rashi? I mean, how did that happen, one? And two, how many others were lost that were probably so incredible that the whole Jewish world would change if we only had, I don't know what percentage, but a percentage of what was lost over the years?
Right. No, listen. In 1242, they burned 24 cartloads of the Talmud in the, you know, I don't know how anyone could root for the St. Louis Cardinals, you know, because St. Louis, I'm just kidding. I love St. Right. Louis. But, you know, St. Louis became, Louis the Ninth became St. Louis because one of the reasons, because he burnt all the editions of the Talmud. So, I mean, there were tremendous, you know, burnings. And in 1554, there was another burning of the Talmud in Italy, which was very terrible because that's where most of them were being printed then. I mean, when the Jews were expelled from Spain, you know, we know about the murders and we know about the expulsion, but there was also a tremendous amount of Jewish knowledge lost. So I think the fact that we have anything is, you know, Siyata d'Shamaya, it's that Hashem has protected us. I think it's a to me, it's a tremendous thing in Emuna. You're right, you know, that Rashi could live and and that we would have what he said. I think it's a I think it's, you know, Hashem's favor, you know, towards the Jewish people.
And now, when you look around, there are so many Sfarim. I mean, I find it, I mean, I just went to a shul recently, and they have a like a room of old Sfarim that people are giving away because nobody wants them. And, you know, right. I'm not saying, you know, they're really all that valuable, but I know people have nice libraries, nice collections, and they have no one to give it to. This is an issue right. today.
Yep. I mean, you know, unfortunately, there's, it's not just even people who, you know, you have situations where the, you know, the Zeta was religious and he gave it to the, you know, the father wasn't, the children are even less so, and then they come, you know, when, you know, the father dies, they just take a box of books or five boxes of books and then they just bring it to the shul or the kolo and they just dump it. And, you know, unfortunately, most of the books, when I say they're not valuable, I mean, they're not unique. There are many of them around. The newer editions are much better. They're retype set. I mean, the, you know, many of the editions that were printed in, you know, the late 1800s, early 1900s were just, you know, kind of photo offsets of things before. The Rosh Yeshivos are very difficult to, I'll give you an example, the Minchas Chinuch, you know, it's very hard to read because of all the Rosh Yeshivos. So now it's new and you can read it. The Hamak Dover is the same thing. So who wants an old, you know, if you have a Hamak Dover from the 1950s or whatever, it's hard to read, you know. You get the new one, it's all retype set, there's notes on the bottom, and so...
No, you're right, you're absolutely right. And also, I think, you look at something like Art Scroll. So, and Rabbi Weinberg has always mentioned that to me because he has a tremendous collection of Sfarim. But he was saying that if you look at, you know, Art Scroll will put out a series on the Rambam, okay, or the Ramban on Chumash. It'll be 23 volumes. Who has room for this? I mean, it's not like it used to be where, you know, you had one Sefer, you had a Mishnah Berurah, and it was a small little volume. Today, it's 35 books. You know, it's incredible.
Right. But they're better. I mean, I agree with you. It takes a lot of room, but they're definitely better. And then of course the internet, though, the Heiliger internet, as we say, you know, it's such a tremendous aid for study. I mean, you go to HebrewBooks.org and get any safer, you know, wiki text. You get the, you just get anything, and it's amazing what you're able to do. And I mean, you can almost learn now, you know, instead of two guys with a, you know, two Gemaras, or you know, you have two computers, and you're able to act. You don't even have to get up from your chair to go to the,
There's no question. You can Google anything you want, and you're going to find
you can highlight it, and you can find out, and you can get a picture of what the Tana looked like, what they think the Tana looked like. You know, I mean, you can get everything. So
what happens? Okay, you have all these Sfarim.
Yes.
And I presume you have kids who are interested in this forum, right?
I have the best kids.
Okay. So they're all interested. They're all interested in the.
They're unbelievable. And my daughters-in-law. I mean, I have a daughter, and I have two daughters-in-law, and they're interested. I have a daughter-in-law that teaches Jewish history. I mean, she's more interested than anybody. So. And my daughter, I mean, they're amazing. So actually, it was funny, I was telling someone the other day, I have a cousin who's about 20 years younger than I am, who buys old books, and I said to him, you know, at my age, I don't buy a book unless I think I know who I'm going to give it to.
Uh-huh. Interesting point. A very, very,
yeah,
very good
sure.
point.
I mean, I'm not going to, you know, if it's a few dollars here or there, you know, sure, I'll buy it or anything, but, you know, I'm not going to buy, you know, spend $500 on a book, you know, if I don't think anyone's going to be interested in it. So I buy ones that I have almost a kid in my, and even, Baruch Hashem, you know, I even have grandchildren who are old enough who I think might be interested in it. They're all... You know, they're all being raised in a certain way, and so I don't worry about it. And I always tell them, you know, bis hindered and svansik. You could, you know, ones you want you keep, and the ones you don't you sell. You buy other books with
Correct.
It. That's all.
Absolutely,
they always have some value.
Absolutely, fantastic. Well, listen, Eli, it's really great talking to you, and I hope people are going to read the article and be fascinated. Hopefully, come on to the interview. And like, okay. and it's a great title, by the way, When Books Can Speak. Because really, like you said, you pick up the Sefer, you say, wow, 300 years, how many different people held this book? If this book could only tell the history of the last 300 years, it would be amazing. So, Yasher Koach, continue the great work, okay? Nice having
you
on the program.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Be well.